Well, this morning, we continue our conversation about what it is to share what we love, to be a part of the world by offering something, to be a part of something bigger. And this morning, we hear that in the story of Esther. Esther is actually an entire book in the Hebrew Scriptures, sometimes called our Old Testament. Interestingly enough, Esther almost didn't make it into the Bible. We'll talk about that. I want you to hear the story this morning, as it's a powerful and amazing story. Many of us haven't heard that often. The story of Esther begins as the queen of their country is being kicked out. You see, the king had called for her to come into the court and be present with him. And she said, "No, thank you." Well, the king was not too pleased with this and sat with his advisors and said, "I asked her to show up and she said no." The king was a little upset, but his advisors were just really nervous. "Your Highness, if the other people in the country hear this, their wives might not start listening to them as well, and then we'll have all these women who aren't listening to their husbands, and everything will fall apart. You must do something." Interestingly enough, this is not the reason it almost didn't make it in. Okay. So, the king says, "You know what? Let's get rid of her. She's gone. She shall never again be allowed in the palace. She shall be banished." And they said, "Okay, it's done. But now you need a queen." He says, "Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go find me a queen, the fairest and most beautiful." This is not a Disney story. "The most fairest and beautiful of all the land." So they go out and they start going to neighborhood, and they look around and they gather together some of the most beautiful people of each of these little neighborhoods, and they bring them all together. And in small little groups, they bring them before someone who says, "Let's just pick the two best," and they keep doing this until there's only a few left. I mean, this is, again, actually, it's quite like The Bachelor. Really detestable, right? And they just keep sending people home until there's only one person left. And her name is Esther. Now, Esther had grown up, actually raised by her uncle. His name was Mordecai. When her folks died, Mordecai raised her as his own. Now, Esther and Mordecai, like many people, had a secret. See, they were descended from the house and the line of Benjamin, which means they were Jewish. But she just didn't talk about this much at this time, in this place, with this king. So before she went off to go be a part of this reality show, "Who's Our Next Queen" thing going on, Mordecai looks at her and says, "Whatever you do, don't tell anybody you're Jewish." So she's there. She meets the king, and she becomes a part of the royal household. Now, this does come with some interesting things. There are certain places in the royal household you're never allowed to go unless the king invites you in. You see, it's part of the royal court. The king is there, and only the people he asks get to be there. In fact, there are other folks who have sort of walked in and said, "Hey, Your Highness, I didn't ask you here. Leave." It never ends well. So she learns these rules, she settles in, and she becomes a part of the royal household. Now, interestingly enough, her uncle Mordecai works at the palace. So there are days he sort of gets to stand right outside and talk to her over the wall. He works as one of the guards at the gate. And at one of the days, as he's standing there guarding the gate, he hears a couple people who work in the palace grumbling. They're very upset with the king. They're very angry. And they decide that they're going to kill the king. They work in the household. They can make this happen. So Mordecai realizes he's got to do something. But he decides to help Esther out. I mean, she's new, and you saw things didn't go well for the last queen. So he goes and he tells Esther, "Listen, this is going to happen. Warn the king." So when given permission to be in the king's presence, she tells the king this about his life, and he's very excited. They find the guys, they get rid of them, and the king is safe once again. And he looks at Esther and he says, "Thank you so much. You've saved my life." And Esther decides she doesn't need this credit. She says, "Actually, there's a man who guards the gate. His name is Mordecai, and he saved your life." So the king says, "Well, that's just fantastic. Somebody write that down." And he moves about his day. Now, along about this time, there's this guy named Haman. Now, there's a lot of creepy, weird people in the Bible. He is one of the creepiest, weirdest, and honestly most evil characters in the Scriptures. Mordecai is, Jewish, and he sees this guy. His name is Haman. Haman comes to power. He's one of the number two folks for the king. And Haman begins to help run things. And he's in charge of all the people that work in the palace, and he says, you all shall bow down to me because I'm in charge. And everyone's scared of this guy, does, except for Mordecai. Being the good Jewish man that he is, he's upheld in his heart, as of so many before him, that he would not bow down to anyone but the Lord. So he does it. And Haman gets angry. Haman gets very angry, because sort of like our story earlier with, well, if this guy's not going to bow down, what happens when everyone else doesn't? And he gets upset, and he goes to the king, and he tells the story of people not listening, and how there's this group of people, and they have these other motives, and they are not honoring the king, and oh man, it's anti-Semitism at its best. Well, not best, in a good way. And the king says, well, you know what? I don't like how that sounds. Take care of it. Haman says, well, what I'd love to do is just exterminate all of the people who believe this. The king says, if that's what you think needs to happen, that's what you think needs to happen. Take care of it. This is a genocidal edict. Haman writes it and sends it out to every city and every province. Hey, on this date of this month, we're going to kill all the Jews. And it goes out. Mordecai learns of this. Being near the palace, he heard that this is what was being written up and sent out. And he knows how grave the situation is. So he goes and he finds Esther. And he says, Esther, this is going to happen. These are your people. This is your family. You've got to do something. And Esther is scared. She's completely uncertain. What is she to do? If she just walks in to tell the king something, it doesn't end well. There's this beautiful moment in conversation, and this is from the fourth chapter. Mordecai says these words, Esther, if you do not speak up at this very important time, I believe that relief and rescue will appear for the Jews from another place, but you and your family will die. But who knows? Maybe it was for such a time as this that you became part of the royal family. So, encouraged by these words, that perhaps for just such a time as this, Esther walks into that room and talks to the king uninvited. But she's a pretty smart person, so when he says, what are you doing here? She says, I wanted to invite you to dinner. Let's do a dinner. Bring Haman. We'll all have a meal. The king says, oh, that sounds great. And it's planned. So she gathers them together, she makes a beautiful meal. The king loves the meal. He loves that she would want to do this for him. And he says, what can I do for you? I'd even give you half the kingdom if you asked for it right now. This is just such a great time. She says, actually, maybe we could just have dinner again tomorrow. She's not ready to dive into this yet. You can hear in the scriptures the anxiety and the maybe I need to wait a little bit. But there's not much time to wait. He says, dinner tomorrow sounds great. We'll see you here. Well, Haman's leaving the palace, and he bumps into Mordecai and just sees him there and still, you know, really angry, doesn't like the guy. Goes home and is complaining to his wife and his family that he's so not respected. He just had dinner with the king and the queen, and yet there's this guy, and he just can't stand him, and he's really whining. Well, his wife says, well, you should do something about it. So Haman begins to plot Mordecai's death. His wife encourages him to build a spike 75 feet high that he can impale Mordecai upon for all the world to see. That's what we should do to him so that you get the respect you deserve. He puts the whole plan in place and he's ready to do this as soon as he gets the chance. Now, they get back for dinner the next night. But between these meals, the king, I don't know, maybe it was indigestion from the very rich meal that Esther had made, the king can't sleep. And so, like many of us, he decides that reading history would be a lovely way to fall asleep. So he pulls out the history book and he's reading through and he gets to this page that says, and the king's life was saved by the man Mordecai. He goes, huh, I must have been pretty busy that day because I don't think we ever said thank you. So when Haman arrives at the palace, the king looks at him and says, Haman, hypothetically, let's say there's this guy. He's just awesome. He's done great things for you. How do you think we should celebrate and honor him? Now, being the self-centered individual that Haman is, Haman thinks, the king's asking me what I want for my party. So Haman starts putting together this big list. Here's how it goes, Your Highness. I think you should get one of the robes that you've worn and put it onto this person, and then put him on one of your horses, and then have the royal court parade him around town, having the crowd shout, the royal court shout to the crowd, this is how the king honors those who he favors. And they should parade all around town doing this. Yeah, that's what, I mean, hypothetically, Your Highness, that's what I'd like. Yeah, you should do that. The king looks at him and says, Haman, go do it exactly what you said for the man Mordecai who works at the gate. Haman's just like, what? So can you just imagine him walking through the streets as the guy, I mean, his nemesis, and no one knows why, but he just can't stand this guy, on the king's horse, in the king's robe, and guess who gets to yell, this is how the king honors those who he favors. This, Haman is just livid. But he knows his plan is getting close to coming to fruition, so he deals with it.